This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
The international break is here, and it's time for a quick breather before the relentless action of the final weeks of the season. You don't need me to reiterate the situation at the top of the table, because you've all been nervously checking in on every minute of every match that both Manchester City and Liverpool have been playing, haven't you? No need to lie, it's a safe space here. We've all been doing it. There's only so long we can put off talking about that week of doom that's coming up as well, but you'll forgive us for kicking that particular can down the road. For now, we'll stick to two topics on this week's show. First, we're going to review the FA Cup game against Southampton, and then we're going to do something a little bit different and look at how we as fans can deal with the pressure of this title race. I'm David Mooney, and I'm joined today by City fans Howard Hocking.
Hello.
And One Football's Dan Burke.
Hello, David. How are you doing?
Feeling the pressure. Feeling the pressure. That's like we're in end of March, and I'm already sweating about this title race. So
hashtag heads gone.
Yeah, absolute heads gone here. So I hope you two got your heads screwed on, because I certainly am.
Yeah. Past experiences go by and I have not now.
Yeah, excellent. So we can all panic together. Let's start with that situation, Howard, because it is going to be a tight few weeks. Let's start with Southampton. What did you think of the performance? And did the performance at Southampton do anything to ease the concerns that you might have about the tightness of this title race?
No, not really. But then it's so hard to define, really. It's like, I didn't enjoy much of the match itself. And then at full time, we've just won 4-1 at Southampton in the FA Cup, a team we couldn't beat twice in the league, a team that are good and were clearly up for it on the day. That's a brilliant result. Yeah. And of course, we made a few changes. Where the teams are, what this means, it's the FA Cup, not the league, and it's kind of different. It doesn't, we've only won what the FA Cup wants under Pep. It's like, do you take much? If we played terribly and gone out, would it have really meant anything to the league campaign? Probably not. So I'm as confused as ever, really, about what lies ahead, because I think anything could happen for City and Liverpool, and there's lots of twists and turns. And I don't think the result told us that much, but at the end of the day, we put 4 past Southampton. I'm certainly taking more positives from it than I am negatives.
Yeah, it really is an interesting situation, Dan, because, as Howard said, Southampton were very, very problematic for City in the league. And I felt they were very problematic for City in the FA Cup tie, except City went and put 4 past them.
Yeah, I think the scoreline flattered us, to be honest. I think it was so flattering that I think I actually blushed when Mahrez put that fourth goal in. It was a weird game, really, that kind of turned on that penalty. I think were it not for that, it might have been a very different story. And even at 2-1, we weren't looking too convincing. I think that wonder goal from Foden really came at the right time for us, and then we just got the fourth and saw the game out. Then it was weird to see us look a little flustered against their high press, and I don't think the defence was given an awful lot of protection, which was a bit of a worry. It seemed to be a bit too easy for their forwards to find gaps in between the defence. That chance Armstrong had in the first half when he hit the post, and that one that Adams had at I think it was 2-1 at the time, or maybe 1-1, they were a bit too close to call for my liking. So it's a little bit worrying, but yeah, we're in the semi-final of the Cup. It's a 4-1 win against a team who've taken points off us twice this season, so it's not to be sniffed at, really. And I think maybe it's good that we broke that little mini hoodoo that Southampton have got over us. And it's just all about results at this stage now, really.
The way you said Chance Armstrong then as well made him sound like a wrestler from the 80s. Don't know why that came into my head while I was thinking that. Maybe that is literally the pressure of the title race that's doing that. That's making me think like that. It's interesting to hear what Guardiola said after the game about it. Because, first off, De Bruyne was interviewed on BBC One straight after the game. And the way the question was put to him, it was kind of like, oh, well, a great penalty from you, a good performance. You're into the semi-finals, another trip to Wembley. Man of the match for yourself, all good. And he kind of battered it away and went, well, I didn't think we played that well in various parts. And he was really brutally honest about it. And then Guardiola in the press conference said this.
I think we make a good 25, 30 minutes, the last 15 minutes for the quality they press and the intensity they do. We forgot to play. We don't have the courage towards the ball, and even in tough situations, try to don't lose it. But even in easy ones, we lost it because we were not able to have the personality to play. The second half was a little bit completely different, except the first minutes. And we played much, much, much better. After, it's a tight game. I was in the Premier League games against Southampton for the quality they have. So they're incredibly well organized. They provoke you to play frontal balls, and the frontal balls, they are so aggressive. And of course, they have a good build up. But after 2-1, second half was much better. We play more in their own side, and at the end, the quality from field and React did the difference.
Please support the show by becoming a backer. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
So Howard, when you hear Guardiola speak like that, is it reassuring that he's there to kind of address the issues that were in that game? Because the players, he likes them to accept the pressure, and it kind of felt like they weren't that comfortable accepting it against Southampton.
Yes and no, because it's a bit of a lottery with Pep, isn't it? I've heard him like gushing after some of our worst performances, and sometimes he's critical after a good performance. I don't really take much notice of what he says, not because he's an idiot, because whatever we're seeing, if we're seeing something and something's not perfect, you know he's seeing it, and he's probably having a sleepless night about it as well.
So it's almost like he's trying to bring it back down to the middle, isn't it? Bring you in when you think you're doing well, and push you forward when you think you're doing badly.
But I do like to hear him be critical, not call out individuals or anything like that. It does reassure me a bit when he just says it out loud, like, no, I didn't think we did this or did that. Because it's interesting, and he's always thinking about how everything can be better, because he wants everything to be perfect. So I don't think, if he doesn't say something, I don't think it means he's not thinking about it. But it does reassure me slightly when he says things like that, because maybe it suggests he's thinking about it even more than usual. So
yeah,
or he sees a trend or something like that. So, and you know, he'll be working on it. If he said it, he'll be working on putting it right for whatever the next game is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to look at this kind of in an upside down way, Dan, because maybe the pressure that Southampton were putting on City will be good experience for those upcoming Liverpool games, because Liverpool will put similar sort of pressure on City, and they conceded once and it was a defensive error.
Yeah. I mean, as Guardiola said in the Amazon documentary a few years ago, you have to play football with courage, don't you? That's how City always play. And we're going to come up against teams who want to press us high. And I think playing through a high press is one of the hardest things to do in football. And luckily, we're one of the best teams in the world at doing it, if not the best. So it's still going to be challenging. I think the problem in this Southampton game was that we weren't keeping the ball high up the pitch as well as we usually do. We didn't have that level of control over the game that we often do. And there were a few too many turnovers, and that was putting pressure on the back four. And you think a better team, might have punished us than Southampton. But like Howard said, nobody's going to be more aware of that than Guardiola and his staff. And maybe it's a good time to have a performance like this now. They can tweak a few things for the games coming up, look at what worked, what didn't work so well, and prepare in the best way possible for this game against Liverpool in a few weeks.
Well, here's my kind of writing the upside down thoughts, because if that was good experience for playing Liverpool and Southampton basically punished a defensive error, you'd expect Liverpool to punish more defensive errors, wouldn't you?
You would. Yeah, they're a good side, but I think they have just as many reasons to worry about us as we do them. I think it's easy to compare everything that we do to Liverpool at the moment. I mean, I'm like everyone. I'm walking around, they're sort of living rent-free inside my head at the moment, and they keep winning, whereas we've dropped points recently, and we're looking at them and they're sort of coming up, breathing down our necks, coming up behind us, and you think everything, all of our weaknesses are going to be ruthlessly exploited by them when we play them, but they have got weaknesses too. I've watched them recently against Chelsea in the Carabao Cup final, against Arsenal in the league, against Forest in the Cup even at the weekend, and they gave chances away. They might have been punished for them by better teams as well. I mean, surely they're going to drop points if they don't, and they go on and I think it'll be 18 wins in a row if they win every game between now and the end of the season, then fair play, they deserve the title. But yeah, I'm just trying not to be too daunted by the next 2 months, really. And I keep telling myself that it's kind of good to be nervous and just taking one game at a time, really.
Is it working?
not really, but yeah, I'm just trying to focus on that Burnley game coming up, which I'm pretty nervous about that. if I'm being honest,
it's not going to be fun. It wasn't fun a few years ago, was it? Howard, just want to have a quick look at the setup for City in this game, because one of the problems that Southampton were causing City in the league games was that Rodri was very isolated. There was no ball into him from the centre backs. Once again, Southampton were cutting off the kind of of space to him. And I'm kind of wondering, like, Guardiola's kind of setup for it can't simply have been, oh, just do what you normally do, but just do it better, can it? Surely.
No. it's a bit of a trend recently. Yeah, you cut off Rodri, you've got issues in his side. My other issue is not that Kevin De Bruyne, Gundogan, Rodri playing together aren't all, I don't know if you'd say world-class, top-class players, but it's when City don't have the ball, are they mobile enough or dynamic? And I think that it does expose us a bit, having those three against such an energetic side that can find space and are pressing high. So still, part of me still thinks it's the FA Cup and he wouldn't have played this side in a league game and it doesn't really matter. And he had to make some changes. I mean, I'd have been more annoyed as a Southampton fan that changes were made to their front line for this game when they haven't got our April Champions League or a league title to go for. So man just like to make changes sometimes. And it's different because, you know, if Edison was in the side, then it completely changes the way we play out from the back and how they can press, and Mahrez and Foden would be there, which changes the link between defence and midfield and the forward line. So I wouldn't take too much from it, but it is one issue that sometimes you can play. Liverpool will obviously be energetic and press, and if you play certain players, the transition and when we don't have the ball and the ability that some managers are seeing now to cut off Rodri can be an issue in games. It's an issue Pep's always faced, and he always adapts and he'll try something new. But at this stage of the season, you don't want to be trying too many new things out, do you?
Yeah. I just wondered if it might be a case of maybe one of, even if you play in those three and have Rodri, Gundogan and De Bruyne, if one of them has to be alongside Rodri. I know the dreaded double pivot phrase is thrown in there with the kind of Rodri, Gundogan thing. But if you put them next to each other, then the centre-backs have another pass, don't they?
They do, yeah. There was some players dropping back, and maybe it increased more as the game went on. By the end, City were flowing forward and looked like they'd score every time they went forward. But that's probably because, you know, Southampton were out of steam, and once you get the fourth, obviously the head's dropped after the third goal. I think it is absolutely crucial, in the same way the second one was, because nothing really was happening at the time. There's things like that. The double pivot's hard to define in a way, because players, it's not in a Pep team, the formation changes minute by minute, and it changes whether they're in possession or out of it. So it's not really a true double pivot anyway, but I think it does help that you need someone dropping back, and it's better Gundogan than Kevin De Bruyne, because I want to see Kevin De Bruyne going forward more than anything, not dropping back. So the higher up the pitch, the better in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I want to touch on something Howard said there, Dan. In that Guardiola did make changes. It's obvious from here until the end of the season. You know, all the players that we want to play every game can't play every game, can they? You can't have Foden, Mahrez, Bernardo in every single game. You can't have De Bruyne in every single game. So it's kind of a real balancing act at the minute.
Yeah, I've seen a few people recently talking about Gundogan and saying that they want him to sort of play every game between now and the end of the season, because he brings that kind of calming presence to the midfield, which I agree with. But what does that mean for Bernardo Silva? Does that mean he doesn't play then? Because we'd want De Bruyne on the pitch at all times as well. I think we've seen recently that having Gundogan, Bernardo and De Bruyne on the pitch at the same time doesn't really work. It's not really a very well-balanced way to do things. And with the forward line, I think it's pretty clear at the moment, to me anyway, that our best front three, our most informed front three, is Sterling, Foden and Mahrez. So that would be the one that I would like to see starting against Burnley. And then we go from there, I guess. And we can always bring Grealish and Jesus off the bench, who are both in pretty decent form themselves. I think in previous years, we've seen Pep rotate less and less as we approach the kind of crunch end of the season. So I could imagine that, but that'd be the case, that he's kind of working out what his best 11 is. My big worry, really, going back to Rodri, I think with the midfield, we've got away with it. It's always been a problem under Pep that the sort of holding midfielders have been exposed, but we've got away with it because the holding midfielder has been in incredible form. Fernandinho was at the peak of his powers a few years ago, and at the start of the season, Rodri was playing amazingly and doing that job by himself. I think Rodri's performances have dipped a little bit in recent weeks, which is to be expected because of the incredible workload that he's had. Yeah. And hopefully he will kind of like get back to that level that he was at the start of the season, towards the end of the season. But I still worry that we're a little bit stretched too thin in certain areas. You know, an injury to Rodri or an injury to Cancelo or Walker, and that could be, you know, the death of the season, essentially. So I just hope and pray that those three in particular stay fit for the rest of the season, because we do have a lot of squad depth in some areas, but we're quite shallow in others, I think.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that is an interesting point. I mean, Howard, in terms of depth, we hear all the time that City have great strength in depth, but I'm not 100% sure it's true if there's injuries there, because it suddenly means that players have to start playing consecutive games where they might have had rest.
It's a tight squad, and it seems weird. I think Pep had to rotate this side for the FA Cup, and probably would have been quite, yeah, accepting if it had gone wrong in a way, because it is the third it's the third level in our priorities. It comes third. It's just the way it is, the league and the Champions League, and it might seem weird to rest players before or rotate before an international break, but you've got someone like Bernardo Silva, who I think is looking a bit tired as well in recent weeks. He might have some huge international games over. Well, he's got one for starters.
Yeah,
might end up be playing against Italy to go to the World Cup. He's not going to have 2 weeks off. You know, some of our players have a break, some don't. He had to rotate.
But Mahrez will be in both of Algeria's games.
A playoff as well, isn't it? Rodri, if he does play, I mean, Spain have only got, like Albania and Iceland, I think. So very varied schedules for the players. And it's a small squad. I mean, as we all know, it's not a bigger squad. It's not even 25 players. And Pep likes to keep it tight. And of course, the age-old problem, we don't have a striker. It means we're having to use a lot of players much of the time. So there are areas, as Dan says, that you lose one player in a few positions, then suddenly you're really exposed. But yeah, there's under 2 months of the season to go. So you're just hoping that there's not too many injuries in that period. But yeah, it will be stretched, the squad, definitely, because once you scrape, we have 17 players or so are absolutely top class, but once you scrape below that, then it depends in this crucial part of the season how much is Pep willing to use youth players or, other players like that. I think he trusts quite a select number of players right now.
Yeah, and he'll put them through. He'll keep playing them when he can, and that's that kind of could all add up to problems later down the line with tiredness, can't it?
There's even like a senior player like Jesus, who I'm not sure he trusts totally at the moment to play in a big game. So just makes his options even thinner at the moment, I think.
Dan, just touching on the Edison point, I just want to have a quick chat about Zach Steffen and the defence from weekend, because I thought Steffen made a few good saves, but I think as you touched upon, was he looked a bit nervous with his footwork and off his line, didn't he?
Yeah, which is to be expected, I think, because he tends to play about one game a month, doesn't he? So you're bound to be a little bit rusty or just not quite in the groove. I think he's a very able deputy and has been the whole time he's been here. I don't think he's really put too many feet wrong. That's not a thing to say, is it? But I've just said it. so it was a pretty rare mistake for him, really, for the goal. I probably wouldn't play him again this season. I wouldn't play him in the FA Cup again, just because I don't think we could afford even minor risks. If we do want to go for the treble, which we should do, then I would play our best team in all the games left, all the available games left, and that includes Edison. But I'm willing to give Steffen a bit of a pass for that goal, because I think he's been pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, does the goalkeeper need a rest? That's the other question. I mean, as much as Edison is not a normal goalkeeper, Howard, do you need to take him out of the squad every now and then and let him have the time away? Because like even just being on the pitch, even if you're not doing anything or even if you're just passing it about a bit, you're still in the game. You're still mentally there, aren't you?
Well, I mean, Steffen's not in to give Edison a rest. I think he's in because, as we've seen down the last decade, there's an obligation to give your second keeper the cup games in domestic cups. For that reason, I think Steffen plays in the semi-final as well, which is not something I necessarily agree with, but it could easily happen. I mean, Edison's got gastroenteritis as well now, so hopefully he's available for Burnley next week. But, that could be anything. It could be a 48-hour thing. It could be serious. No idea. He's been pulled out of international duty, so we may need Steffen. There's nothing wrong with Steffen. It's just he's not Edison. So that Southampton game would have been very different. I think Edison could come out and chop an opposition player down quite easily. Yeah, he has that brain fart.
Yeah, definitely.
And in a way, you could say Stefan was right to not go for that ball. But I think the mistake by Stefan was he was just slow to react in the first place. Once he does react, he's probably right not to try and get the ball. And let's be honest, it's very poor feet from Laporte to, you know, it still shouldn't have come to anything now, and we'd easily have forgotten it. Stefan's problem is he's not Edison, and that it would have been a different game with Edison because Southampton's press would be different when you've got someone who can play, who could easily play as an outfield player for City, probably, because his distribution's so good. So, but Stefan, yeah, I think as a manager, you're obliged to give such a good goal deputy some games. No real way around it. He has to get some playing time.
Yeah. I just wonder if one of the other subtle differences as well would be Edison would probably be maybe 5 yards further forward for a couple of the other balls. So he'd be, he'd be a bit more ready for it. I don't know. I just want to finish this first part of the show, Dan, we can't help but look at the future with that Liverpool and Atletico run. And we talked about the rotation. We've talked about keeping players fresh. One worry I have is... The draw for both the FA Cup and the Champions League, the way that the schedule works out now, with City having to alternate these opposition, they're two very, very different styles of play that they're going to come up against. Is that likely going to cause problems? Because the intensity of the two Liverpool games compared to maybe how much of the ball City have against Atletico could mean that the game plan in two games, like so close to each other, is really different.
Yeah, you would imagine they will have a lot of ball against Atletico at home, and Atletico will kind of sit back and try and soak up pressure, whereas with Liverpool, it's going to be a bit of a shooting match, isn't it, really? You'd imagine like it's going to be similar to that game in 18-19, where it was just an incredibly intense game, end-to-end, both teams really going hell for leather. I don't know whether it's going to affect them too much to have to sort of differentiate between the two styles. That's what Guardiola's paid the big money for, to kind of work out a game plan for both of those games. That's what the players have been bought for, to be able to adapt to those situations. So it's not a huge concern of mine. I'm more focused on the league game personally than the Champions League. I'm sort of hoping that we can maybe just kind of scrape through against Atletico and not pick up any injuries and not tire ourselves out too much and really have everything to go full guns blazing against Liverpool, because that's the big one for me of those three games.
Yeah. Howard, final word for this is, I guess, don't take your eye off the Burnley game.
No, that's all I'm thinking about. Well, I'm enjoying an international break, even though I was bored by Monday afternoon. At least we've got a run up to this. I'm only thinking about the Burnley game, really. We need to win that.
Do you think City have needed this international break?
No, I don't think it really makes any difference. You really don't know what you're walking back into. Liverpool as well, or everyone else, after the international break. As I say, you've got some on holiday, some playing intense games, some playing friendlies. Who knows? Who knows? They won 4-1 at Southampton. I was quite... Look, you know, I wouldn't have minded as a fan actually to have had another game pretty quickly after that game. I think what could work, if Liverpool or Atletico Madrid are two different styles, it at least allows Pep to use his squad.
Yeah.
Because he'd probably see certain players being more necessary tactically for one game, but not the other one. So it could work in our favour, you know, minimal gains here, or marginal gains, in that he can use the squad better if you're playing two teams with very different styles.
That Burnley game, we're going to be second in the league, aren't we, when we play that? Because Liverpool play Watford, the early kickoff on the Saturday, and they're almost certainly going to win that. So for the first time in months, we're going to be second in the league when we kick off a Premier League game. So it'll be interesting to see whether that has any sort of psychological impact on things.
My head has my head has gone already, Dan. So I can't imagine what else of my body will have gone by then, you know?
Thanks for the reminder that...
Yeah, right. Well, we're doing things a little bit differently, as we said, on this week's episode of the podcast. So it's time to say goodbye to this week's panel. So thank you both to Howard Hockin.
Yeah, goodbye. Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And Dan Burke.
Thank you very much.
Now, we've not got a game to preview, and then there's the final run-in to come after the international break. Some would say that we're phoning it in this week, but others would say that I've had a really ingenious idea to have a good discussion. To do that, let's introduce Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap. Hi, Neil.
Hello there.
Now, for this, we're not really concerning ourselves with who is going to win the title at this point. It'll come as no surprise that I want it to be City. Neil, you want it to be Liverpool. We're not going over any new ground there, are we?
Absolutely not. Unless, yeah. I was going to really left field say Chelsea have still got a shout, and you never know, you're looking at a raffle.
Yeah, here we go. But we've both been here before, haven't we? In recent years, both sets of fans have experience of their team running away with the title, and both have experience of desperately hoping that the other one would drop points week in, week out to make their own lives easier. The interesting thing I want to talk about for this, Neil, is that we always talk about these being the big moments that we live for. And I'm not entirely sure that it's true, because all I'm feeling at the moment is just real dread for the end of this season. Like, it's really easy to watch your team running away with it. And as everybody else goes, oh, wouldn't we love a great close title race? We all go, actually, no, I quite like it when City are running away with the league and that everything's good and rosy and it's all good fun. Because this isn't fun, is it?
You see, I oscillate massively on this question, because ultimately this is the point where the highs become almost unspeakably high. So the example, I've got two examples from the 18-19 season where Liverpool don't win the league. When away at Southampton, we're dreadful for 20 minutes. It's 1-1 for a long period of time. We get a fortunate goal back, and then Salah runs the length of the pitch and scores. And it genuinely is one of the most, if not the most, over-the-top raucous celebrations I've ever been part of. And I remember leaving Southampton to get back to London that night when I was staying over, and just having this real sense of, oh God, what if this is it? What if this actually is the time Liverpool win the league? What if I'll never feel like this again? What if this is the one? And genuinely sort of having that moment of, you know, there's the sense of a loss of something. And same season, we go to Newcastle, 3-2, Origi scores with 4 minutes to go.
I remember that game, funnily enough.
I bet you do. It's the one that we play prior to
Leicester,
rifling it in again on the Monday night. And there was a point in that game where Salah went off injured, and I looked at all of my friends. We weren't in Newcastle for that one. I looked at all of my friends, and like, two of them were crying when Salah went off injured. One was just sat facing away from the television. Another one was just sort of shaking. And I remember thinking, this is unbelievable what we put ourselves through in this scenario. And then Origi scored. And everyone, again, did the same thing. But that's just got to be like, you know, where are the narrative gods on this one? This time, it's got... All of that was just unbelievable. But there is an element, you know, where this is, when it is toe-to-toe like this, where I find it hardest working out what it is I'm doing and how I am consuming Manchester City's football matches.
Yeah.
Because I think the most dispiriting thing you can actually do in football is will for a negative result. Because all moments are fraught when you're willing for a negative result, really. Unless it's really going your way, I find it a really quite like almost makes me feel a bit nauseous. Because the good thing when you're willing a positive result is that when Liverpool attack, you feel the world of possibility. When you're willing a negative result, like watching Manchester City build up a good passage of play makes me want to be sick into a bucket. And that's no way to live.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing. I was going to ask you, do you watch City's games or do you avoid it? Because I've spent the last, say this side of Christmas, doing half and half with Liverpool's games. Sometimes I really try and catch up with the result later and just blank it out and go, listen, I'm going to avoid the result. I'm going to have a good day and just, you know, go with it and see whatever happens. I can't control it. And then, like, you played Arsenal recently on a Wednesday night, wasn't it? Because me and my partner were watching a film during your game with Arsenal. It was a film called Coda. It's about a girl who loves music and is a really talented singer, but her family's deaf and she's the interpreter. It's honestly, I would heartily recommend watching it. And the only reason is because I could barely concentrate on that film. And so I had to keep checking the Wikipedia page and the IMDb page to find out what I'd missed in that film. Because I've just spent the entire evening on Twitter looking at my phone, going, oh, it's still 0-0. It's still 0-0. This might be it. It's still 0-0. Ah, they've scored. Ah, okay. And then at 2-0, I suddenly started concentrating on the film again. So what do you do? How do you cope with it?
So I have a couple of strategies. So I think there's different moves. I like it when you play Manchester United and Everton. If you could do that more often, that'd be great. because there's no bad outcome. Certainly current climate where the Blue Brethren are concerned, there is no bad outcome whatsoever. But in a more sort of general way, Palace Monday night, I had an eye on what the scoreline was until about the hour mark, and then I chose to listen to it on the radio whilst doing some ironing. That felt like a constructive use of time. Like, if the worst that happens at that stage happens, fine. Conor McNamara is a brilliant commentator anyway, and he understands the drama of things.
And at least if it all goes wrong, I've got some ironing done.
I've got a pile of ironing. I watched when you drop points against Tottenham, I watched that out with some friends. We had something to eat. We didn't, you know, one of those games, days when you watch, we all supported Liverpool. We've all been at Liverpool's game earlier in the day, but it was one of those ones, you know, when you're not really watching it until you need to watch it.
Yeah.
So that was actually quite healthy, that one. But if I think back to, you know, when you faced Chelsea earlier in this season, or if I think back to 18-19 again, you know, some of those fixtures as they were coming then, I was sort of fine with the Leicester one, in that it was so close to the end of the season that it was just as simple as Liverpool playing, if that makes sense. Like, it was so binary. The Leicester one was just so binary that it didn't really matter. I remember a particularly unpleasant time on my own watching you play Burnley. I didn't enjoy that in the slightest.
Oh, don't worry. None of us enjoyed that one either.
No, exactly. Yeah. But I think that was like an example of this is what I don't. This is a bad version of this. If you sort of see what I mean, this is the one that you don't want through these sorts of games. That was particularly unpleasant, that one, because it wasn't a good game of football, but it was just that example of watching the ball be endlessly around the Burnley box. But not really being able to have that much skin in the Burnley game on the one hand, and also on the other, it just feeling endlessly fraught. That was a bad one, and there was a couple of others that season. As I say, by the time I got to the Leicester one, it's a funny one, and you know, it is so binary when it's that late on. Because the other part of this as well is that obviously I could have City do their bit, or fail to do their bit, but then Liverpool have got to go and do theirs, if you know what I mean. Whereas the Leicester one did just sort of feel like a final.
Yeah, well, it was so. Yeah, again, I guess because it was that was City's game in hand for the final weekend of the season, wasn't it? So it was like it, whatever happens from here on in.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer: statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero, or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. facebook.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Looking at this run in, I know we play each other a couple of times now in the next few weeks, but after that, like, I don't want to say it all comes down to that game at the Etihad, because there's so many opportunities after that for things to change. And I'm a little bit scared of is having another run in like 18-19, because I can't explain what it did to me. I can't explain the entire tension that I felt throughout that running. And then when you look at the end of it and you go, yeah, great, fantastic, you won the title, that should be an exhilarating high. And it was the day of beating Brighton. I was outside the Etihad with Richard Burns, who's often on the podcast as well, and we celebrated like God knows what. But then there was the kind of exhaustion that came from all the tension of the weeks before. And I sit there and I think, well, actually, you know, 2018 was a great title. Like last season was a great title. It doesn't get that much better by having it be so close.
Well,
or does it?
Well, you say that because Liverpool in 2019-20 win their first title in 30 years. And what that means is, in practice, in my adulthood, Liverpool haven't won a title race. They've won the title, but they haven't won a title race.
Yeah.
And 18-19, they can't do any more. Like, they win every game.
You don't care about that, though, do you? Surely.
That they've never won a title race.
Yeah.
I'd quite like one. This year would be great, but I'd rather win it. You know, I'd rather have a situation now where, for instance, we were as far clear at this stage as we were in 1920, and we were able to focus as well on the other trophies, because it wouldn't be as though there weren't wonderful nights to look forward to, full of tension and all of that sort of stuff. So I'd rather have it that way right now. Trust me, don't get me wrong. But in all seriousness, you know, if you're asking me, would I rather 1920 was the way it was or a title race, I'd rather it was the way it was.
Yeah.
But the one thing I would say is that we've literally, you know, and it's something I'd be interested in a conversation around the idea of, well, maybe it's because Liverpool have thrown certain things away. If it wasn't for the fact that in 18-19 we don't, you know, we win every game. We just win and keep winning, and we sort of take that into 2019-20. And it's part of why there isn't a title race, is that Liverpool almost kicked off 2019-20 as though it was April.
Yeah.
And trust me, that was emotionally exhausting. You know, by the time I got to Christmas in that one, we beat Leicester on Boxing Day and you lost to Wolves the next night. And that felt like it was pretty much done. And I remember just sort of going to bed that night feeling like I'd done the Krypton Factor. Even though, you know, I hadn't played, and two, obviously Liverpool hadn't even played, but thinking, oh, that must just be done now. But I think, you know, as I say, it's an interesting thing to observe. I've arguably watched Liverpool be in, I'm trying to think really, in four things that I would genuinely call title races. There's 2002, when Arsenal win it in the end. There's 08-09 when United win it in the end. There's 13-14 when City win it. And there's 18-19 when City win it. And I would say that, you know, in my adult years, there are times when Liverpool genuinely had a really good chance of winning a title. 18-19, they're perfect. In other seasons, they drop points and those ones twist and turn a little bit more. But they were the title races that we've had. And as I say, we haven't won any of them. So yeah. I'd quite like to, you know, have that moment of winning one. I don't know if this will, you know, it's very easy for me to imagine a state of affairs here where Liverpool and Manchester City win every league game between now and the end of the season, and they draw with one another at the Etihad and City win the title. And that's not me doing a crying it in or doing a predictor thing. It's just that there's a thing that happens at this stage of a season where how much it means to other teams at certain phases begins to diminish. And then when you're talking about the best teams, which Liverpool and Manchester City aren't just the best teams in England, they're arguably, I think, proven to be two of the best three teams in Europe between now and the end of the campaign, then you end up then having a situation where those teams should win. And when the other team has less and less to play for as you get closer and closer to the end of the season, that should, combined with that sheer desire and need, I think now leads to
games. Runs, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you just end up finding a way because you need to and they don't, and you're better equipped to.
Yeah. On 18-19, I mean, that season, winning it by such a fine margin from my point of view hasn't really helped me for preparing for this season. You would think that it'd be very easy for me to sit here and say, look, we've been here before. We've done it all before. We've done it against Liverpool before. It's like they're a really good team that we kind of kept at arm's length and then kept at fingernails length for the final few weeks of the season. Like, it should be fine. You should be ready, equipped to deal with it. And the truth is, I'm just not ready for the stress that's it. Like, I still look back at that season and think, yeah, it was a great title, but God, it was stressful. And I don't know, like, does missing out on it this time increase the desire for you to go and like to relive it and relive it with a positive ending instead?
I think I obviously want to relive it and relive it with a positive ending, but actually, I think it's been I think it's a little harder from a Manchester City point of view for a number of reasons than from a Liverpool point of view. This one, and I think that was also possibly a little true of the 18-19 one as well. To your listeners, I want to be really, really clear about this. I still think City didn't get the credit they deserved for the 18-19 title win. And I think there's loads of reasons for that. And I think one of those reasons is the conversation around ownership, the conversations around sports washing.
Yeah.
But I think another one of those conversations is, obviously, if you take those elements out, there's also simply the amount of money that has just been spent on the City side. And there's also the notion that Pep Guardiola is the coach. So City, I think, in a way in which at times the aesthetic beauty of Liverpool's football is underrated or under-discussed in comparison to City's, especially back then, but I still think that it's a little bit the case now. Similarly, when Manchester City show unbelievable levels of character and togetherness and heart, as they do in 1819, which starts on the 2nd of January, I hasten to add, when City put one of the bravest football performances I've ever seen on at the Etihad. I think all of that is the bit that no one wants to talk about. No one wants to talk about City's character. No one wants to, because it's almost like that's not the like Guardiola, the football should transcend all of that. And I think that leads it to be a little bit unfair. And I think the other thing is, because everyone knows about the money, the budget, et cetera, et cetera, there is this idea, well, City should just be there or thereabouts anyway.
Yeah. So the thing I always say in response to that is Guardiola's got no bigger budget than Pellegrini and Mancini had, and look at the difference between what they've achieved and what he's achieved.
That, but also, you know, in terms of, listen, you know, and there's a funny thing here where ultimately this season, when the money comes in, because we're always a year and a bit behind, City's wage budget will be a little bit bigger than Liverpool's, but only be a little bit. And then the question is whether or not you're getting your value for money out of your wage budget. And I'd say that City are, and I'd say that Liverpool are. And Liverpool's wage budget this year might be higher than Manchester United's, but the reason for that is that Manchester United are not going to have to pay out any bonuses.
Yeah.
And Liverpool are. Because Liverpool are getting value for money out of their wage bill. And my point about this is, if we argue that the wages are the defining factor, and we simultaneously argue that Liverpool get value for money out of their wage bill, then where we end up is that Liverpool should also be there or thereabouts along with Manchester City, because we think that City are getting value for money out of their wage bill. Now, there's a wider sort of transfer conversation there, but you can throw a blanket over the amount of wages that Liverpool and Manchester City both pay in reasonable terms. And I think that that's worth bearing in mind, and Liverpool should be held to the idea that they should be here where they are now, broadly, up against any side. But as part of all of this, this is where I think the Liverpool are fortunate in a sense of, I think there is, in part of how Liverpool are discussed and in part of what Liverpool are doing against this behemoth of a City side with one of, if not the greatest coaches who've ever coached a football team, you know, Liverpool are able to maybe talk a little bit more about being on the journey and having the journey lead somewhere than City are allowed to. I think that, like, the journey sort of gets to go without saying for Pep Guardiola. And I don't think that's entirely fair at times, because he's still getting them to put these performances in, and he's still getting them to show that togetherness and that quality. And you can talk all you want about how that's happened, but the flip side is the players themselves, the coach and his coaching staff, have still got to do it. Like, there's a great example that's just down the road from us and just across the city from you of where there has been money, and there's lots of people who haven't done it, either in coaching staffs or on the pitch, and haven't even gotten near to doing it, you know. And this is where I think that's where, in the 1819, but also I just think in general, that City do manage to still set the bar where they set it, for whatever reason they're able to do that, that they are doing it, I think is worthy of a little bit more respect. And I think it would help you, perhaps personally, or perhaps the body politic of Manchester City supporters, enjoy it a little bit more if people were saying, God, City have done brilliantly to be leading this league at this stage of the season against that Liverpool team. Have you seen how good they are? And that's to always frame the other way around.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it a little bit harder to be able to do the thing where you look at each other and go, we're having a great journey.
But does chasing rather than being chased, does that make it easier to enjoy? Because I the only thing I think of is City were chasing in 1819 up until about mid-February. I think it was your game at Everton, wasn't it? That finally swapped it round. And I remember thinking at various stages through kind of that. Well, I actually remember thinking over Christmas when we lost three games in four, I thought they'd chucked it away and that was it. They were never going to catch up. And then I remember thinking after they played Liverpool at the Etihad, okay, this I'm kind of dealing with this now, and this is starting to become enjoyable. They all the other competitions start coming back. The Champions League comes back. The League Cup final is around that time. I'm starting to feel like I'm enjoying this again. And as soon as City went ahead, I'm then thinking, oh God, I hope Liverpool drop off a bit more and stop putting the pressure on us. And so I'm just wondering if being the chasers is the more enjoyable element of it. And it might not be what the coaches want, because obviously at that point your destiny is not in your own hands. But from a fan's point of view, maybe that's easier. I don't know.
I think that there could be something in that, but I think that's because, and I think that the, I don't think this is a modern thing either. I don't think this is just an online thing. I don't think anyone wants to ever feel as though we threw it away. I don't like the phrase.
I am also permanently online. That might not help me.
No, I think it might not help you, but I think that that will have been the case anyway. I think what doesn't help from a permanently online point of view, and this is where, you know, both of these sides are lucky to have the coaches that they have and to be continuing to have the coaches that they have. I think we occasionally could just sort of do with remembering is in August we all start back at zero.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we're talking about a league, when we're talking about a league here in this instance, we all get to start again at zero in August. So whatever happens, and I think that this is a difficult thing to sort of to take on board, but it will reset. It does not just continue. Yeah, I think what Liverpool do in 2019-20 is actually the closest it's ever got to just continuing. The idea that, well, we're just going to act like we're continually in a running until we win the thing was a mad thing to do, but Liverpool do manage to do it. But most football seasons and most football teams, and by most, I mean literally almost the absolute majority, the absolute total of them, not the majority, the total of them, is that, you know, it does reset, it does restart. And I think that that's on the horizon, and that's all right. I think the idea that you don't want to feel as though you blew it.
Yeah, I get that. I do get that, because the more I think about this run-in for this season and the way it's going, I think from my part, I'd be disappointed if City don't win the title. Don't get me wrong, but I think if City finish a couple of points off Liverpool and Liverpool win the league by maybe winning all the games except for that Etihad one where they draw, and then City do exactly the same except one other game they draw or one other game they lose, like, you can kind of go, well, all right, that's acceptable. You understand that. I think what I'm scared of most is maybe dropping points in three games, four games, and suddenly Liverpool winning the title with 10 points as an advantage. Because at this stage in the season now, you know, the end of March, start of April, there's what, 10 games left for both of the sides, 9 games left, that it feels like the margin for error is so tiny now. And I wonder if that's what scares me most.
Perhaps, but then the flip side of that is I'd say, but you could do that and you could still win the European Cup. I think, yeah. I think it's all about, for me right now, you know, being really honest, we've got one in the bag and we could get three more. But if you'd offer me the possibility of getting three more, but a guarantee on either of the big two, and by the way, you didn't tell me which of the two it was, but I was definitely getting one of them, I'd be absolutely delighted.
Yeah. You would find that out as soon as the Premier League season has ended, wouldn't you? So.
You would, yeah. You know that day. But, you know, the idea of just, for me, that's the, you know, it's an unbelievable era for both clubs, especially sort of, you know, obviously defining of Manchester City, the whole era. But, you know, from a Liverpool point of view, it's been so long since a title, and it's also been so long since, you know, we could finish second to City this season, win the Champions League, and genuinely feel, as I felt in 18-19, like, if we're not the best team in Europe, we're in the top two.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where I am with this. I think, you know, if we were to push pretty close until the end of the season, but let's say we drop points... we drop points around the champ in two games. We draw at the Etihad and we drop points in two games around the Champions League semi-final. But we go through in that semi-final, we win the final, and we end up looking at the table and we're 5 points behind Manchester City. I'll feel as though, well, they might be the best team in the world, or we might be the best team in the world, but, you know, we've got that trophy and they got that one, and vice versa. You know, if we'd won a domestic treble even, and then we were facing Manchester City in the Champions League final, and Manchester City turn up and they put a show on and they win the game 2-0, 3-1, you know, I wouldn't be going, oh, well, we're better than you because we've proven it, because we won that league by 5 points. And also, I don't really genuinely think that even that elite, unbelievably driven professional footballers would feel like that either, in either direction. I think they'd think, my God, they're one hell of a team. And I think that that's...
I wonder if that's what's missing, you know, between fans and players, because you think of this week when the draw was done for the FA Cup and it was clear that after you'd beaten Forest that it was going to be a run for City of Atletico Liverpool. Somebody said to me, there's all the fans are going, God, that's a really, really tough run. But equally, the players will look at that, and first off, they'll relish those games because they like the big games and they like playing in the big occasions. And second off, like, the Liverpool players will be just as worried about those City games as the City players are about Liverpool. About the Liverpool games. So I wonder if that kind of respect of knowing that you're up against a good side and, hey, it might go right, but it might go wrong as well, and that's the game we play, that kind of, I wonder if that's missing from the fans.
I think it is a little bit, because everything, this is back to my thing about the fact that we do all start again with same managers and, you know, 90% the same players in August. They know that they're going to start again. They know what's on the line for them professionally and in terms of the medals and in terms of the idea of what it is after the fact. And I'm not saying that the game at the Etihad is going to be played between two sets of schoolboys. You know, it's going to be an aspect of it will be blood and thunder. There'll be a lot of getting into the referee's ear and all that sort of stuff. But I think, like, I think there's an understanding. For instance, I don't think Ilkay Gundogan is knocking around thinking Thiago Alcantara is overrated. I don't think that's happening. You've heard the way Jurgen Klopp talks about Ilkay Gundogan, and it's as though he's talking about his son, for God's sake. You know, I don't think that the one-upmanship is as simple as knowing after the fact when you beat them, they could have beat you.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something which I think that fans could do a little bit better. But I think a lot of that's down to the fact that we sort of culturally, I think, almost don't play enough games now. And that's not just the idea of you've got to have been a footy player or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. What I mean is more. So this evening, I'm going to play snooker with my friend Steve this evening. And he's pretty much as good as I am. And so it's just going to come down to a few moments, and there's a bit of game theory involved. And neither of us are very good. Like, the best break that either of us will put in will be about 20. But we're both trying to get better. But what we understand is that we're playing a game, and there'll be a winner of that game and there'll be a loser of that game. And if we can't, you know, be friendly to a degree afterwards, then what's the point? I think obviously that's not nowhere near the same as A, elite sport, and also B, the tribal elements of football. But I think part of this is we will play Manchester City twice in a week, and we might win one and lose one. And I know which one I'd rather win, but we might win one and lose one.
Yeah.
And the players could be exactly the same or very nearly exactly the same. Passages of play will have similarities between them, but sometimes the ball will bounce one way and sometimes the ball will bounce another. And those two games, one of them can be drawn, but the other one has to have a victor. It has to have an outcome. And I think that the other thing that footballers know and that people who play games know, which I think at times people who just watch struggle with, is sometimes games can get away from you. So last season when Liverpool, one of the reasons why Liverpool are where they are this season is because Alisson Becker goes forward for a header against West Brom to win the game, wins the header, and it goes into the corner. That could have just flashed wide. Alternatively, it could have gone into the keeper's gloves. West Brom could have gone up the other end and scored as Liverpool are all trying to scurry back. And I think if you are in the game and you are in games, you understand that sometimes circumstances or games can sweep you along with them and you do things you wouldn't necessarily do. And that's what I mean when I talk about the great reset, that it all gets to start again. And you can maybe think, well, next time when that happens, we won't do that, or we will do that, but we'll do it this way.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're outside of that and you're just a spectator, you're left with the aftermath of it a little bit. And then that's when people begin to get really cross and really angry and feel like, you know, there was this, that, or the other. Whereas I think if you're a participant, you're almost able to say afterwards, yeah, you wouldn't have done that in a normal circumstance, would you? And I think that that helps. And I think that that's why they're different.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
I think that's spot on, because I was speaking, it's no secret to listeners that we're doing a series of special things to mark the 10th anniversary of the Aguero goal in May. And I was speaking to Nader Manua about being on the QPR end of that goal. And one of the things he was saying was that final day of the season in 2012 was not a normal City performance, because as the clock was ticking down, they were losing the game. They start making decisions that they don't make in normal games, because they are desperate to change the outcome of the game. And you end up with Kompany and Lescott shooting from range instead of doing what they normally do and passing it through the lines and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's right. And let me also say, on the Alisson header, I was so annoyed when that went in. So annoyed, because there's twice in my life I've been in the stadium when a City keeper has gone up for a corner and nearly scored. Joe Hart nearly scored against Sporting in 2012. And if he'd have scored, we'd have gone through on the night. And Kostel Pantelimon went up for a header against United in 2012 again in the FA Cup third round. They were 3-0 up. We'd had company sent off after about 5 minutes. They went 3-0 up. We pulled it back to 3-2 and Pantelimon went up for a corner, won the header and flashed it wide. And on the Joe Hart one was touched wide by Rui Patricio. And I'm thinking, one of these days I'm going to get to see a City keeper go up and score a header. And I can't tell you that I honestly don't think I've ever seen a Liverpool goalkeeper go up apart from that one time. And he goes up and bloody well scores. And it really, really annoyed me, I'm not going to lie.
That's very allowed. I think just on this one, you know, on this season, the way in which it's going to end, I think it is important that people do try and enjoy it. It's worth all of us, because I think as humans, this isn't, again, and this is not a social media thing at all. I think these days you feel as though you've got to sort of caveat your points, which is about wider behaviour versus the behaviour that people see online. But as humans, I think we're really quick to forget. And I think one of the things that we've been really quick to forget, actually, is for 12 months, we weren't allowed to watch any football. We weren't allowed to go into the grounds. Yeah. And, you know, I'm pretty sure I've got one for the Etihad. And I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to relishing it. And I'm looking forward to the fact that genuinely, when I talk about that game at the start of 2019, I think it's probably the best game of football I've ever seen. Just because Liverpool don't win it. You know, the quality that was on show, I think it's the best game of football I've ever seen. And I think that we need to, where we can, you know, I think it's important to try to just enjoy every last minute of this. I know that sometimes in the past it doesn't happen as much now, and I'm glad, but also I didn't care that much anyway. Some Manchester City supporters used to like to lampoon some of my post-match writing, and that's perfectly legitimate. If you put stuff out there, that's going to happen. But part of what I try to write about in terms of, because everyone can watch the match all over the world, is what games of football feel like. Yeah. And I think that we have to hang on to that. It's an important part that for a period of time, we didn't get to feel for games of football in quite the same way. We had the unpleasant experience of having to watch even our own team when we were absolutely on our own and or in small groups. And now we get to go back into stadia. And in amongst all of that, we've sort of forgotten that was a problem really quite quickly. We've got over it really quite quickly. So I think anyone who is listening to this on the Manchester City side, genuinely just enjoy every minute of this. This is brilliant.
Well, can I be honest with you? And what I'm really scared of is what happened to Liverpool in 2019 happening to City this season. And the reason is, I listened to you interviewed on another podcast not so long ago. I think you did the interview years ago, so I honestly don't, if you don't remember it, it's absolutely fine. But it was a podcast called Inside the Beautiful Game. And one thing you were talking about was something that I realised was true of me. And as more, as you said, about playing your mate Steve at snooker as well, I'm wondering if I am just the Manchester City version of you. My highest break, by the way, is 28, but I didn't put a black ball in that entire break, so I was really pleased with that. But the one thing you said was that making podcasts and doing the writing stuff used to be a hobby, and now it's your job. And whenever I meet anybody and whenever I talk about, you know, things, what I do in my life, it suddenly occurs to me that actually supporting City is, like, I'm almost a professional City fan. That's kind of what I do. I make podcasts about City. And what do you do outside of that? Well, I play a few video games here and there, and I'm not great at snooker, and I'll have a go at it. But aside from that, I generally watch City and generally talk about City. And if City lose the title in this run-in, I'm going to have that conversation with pretty much everybody that I know. Because that's all that they know that I talk about, and that's all that they know that I do, and like it suddenly makes me, the feeling of watching that game at the Etihad makes me want to crawl under a rock. Because if City don't get it right, then I might have to have that conversation with all these people.
You will, but what I would say is you'll be proud of them, and that's the, you know, because the level that we're at here, this is not, you know, I mean, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe Chelsea will come back into contention. But this is
can
not...
Can you imagine after we've done this now?
I know. This is not some sort of title race where it's going to be decided on 79 points and there's going to be twists and turns and there'll be the dropping of points. But even then, I mean, you know, those teams were teams to be proud of. Don't get me wrong. But the point being is, I think we've got to hold on to this idea that, you know, for me anyway, what they've done our lot since January has been genuinely excellent under quite odd circumstances and with one hell of a lot of games. You know, they've not just won that one trophy, but they've dragged themselves back into this. And my position after the Arsenal game midweek in the driving rain was, that's it now. Like, they're in a state of grace. And I think that this is we need to let our footballers exist in a state of grace, especially when you support Liverpool and Manchester City, and these are the best ones you've ever seen. They exist in a state of grace. So when, you know, if it does go wrong, if Liverpool do manage to claw something out of the Etihad and go on and win it by 2 points or 4 points, then first and foremost, Manchester City have got other trophies they can win. But also these players, these are players who've got 100 points in the league, 100 points, 99 points, yeah. Or sorry, 98 points. You know, these are still the best ones. And, you know, the manager is still the best one, or one of the best two, you know, from our point of view. You're not swapping them. And I think that that's the... Listen, we can be Manchester United. And what I mean by that is we could be pushing for fourth and maybe if we're lucky getting a cup run. And that's possibly more enjoyable and conducive around talking about it or talking about it with your mates or having nights out or something like that. Or you can want to be the best ones. But if you want to be the best ones, then you've got to let the best ones exist in the state of grace. So if we go to the Etihad and Virgil van Dijk makes a mistake that leads to Manchester City winning the game 1-0, I've got two options. It's either I get unbelievably angry with Virgil van Dijk and never forgive him, or I go, my God, I think you're an absolutely incredible footballer and person, by the way. These things happen. We've got to shrug our shoulders and move on. Yeah. And you've got to, I think we've got to try and let them exist in that state of grace when they're this good. Genuinely, at the minute, I am horrified in one sense and obviously hugely entertained in another with how dreadfully run Everton Football Club have been for 5 years and how much... how staggering it is, actually, when you realise how much Evertonians despise their own football team. None of them exist in a state of grace, but also none of them deserve to. Literally none of them. Not one of them deserves to.
Funny, that. Substitute that for Manchester United, and I'm in exactly the same page.
Exactly. So what I would say to you is, look forward to the thing at the Etihad, and if it goes the way it goes, and then it all goes badly wrong, I think the hobbies thing's interesting, and I think you and I could probably talk about this at length, because, you know, everything I do here at the Anfield Wrap, I've, you know, part of the reason for the snooker is actually trying to have something else to think about and distract me with. I'm trying to think of another couple of things like that at the minute, because it is a valid point. But again, you've picked one hell of a moment to do this. Whilst there's a party that's probably thinking, no, I'd have had more fun when it was Uwe Rosler, the truth of the matter is I was doing this in 2011-12 when it was clear Dalglish had to be sacked, and it wasn't nice because you were going to football matches and Kenny, who was a club legend, had to go, and you're trying to have that argument, and it is an argument, and it's quite an unpleasant argument, and I've done the unpleasant arguments, and I'd rather just have the absolutely brilliant football team, thank you very much, and I'd rather be trying to win everything, and that bit's the better bit, as long as we can accept that they probably can't win everything, they certainly can't win every game, and that when one or two of them make mistakes, the thing that you don't do is, unless those mistakes become permanent and become problematic and become something to, you know, that does need change, what you realise is that these are the best ones. It doesn't get better than this, and it possibly never has.
Yeah. Are you, just finally then, are you feeling any pressure with quadruple talk? Because I've never liked it when City have been in this stage of the season and they've been in all the competitions and that's the talk. Because I also realised this weekend that with, normally at this point, City have won the League Cup, which at this point you've got the League Cup. So you don't have that sort of pressure at the end of the season, because there's not a danger you're finishing this season with no trophies. But I would also kind of accept that if you say from this position, if you only finish with the League Cup, it does feel a bit like a disappointment, because that's where City were in recent years. But equally, for me, there's a real possibility that City go through the end of the season and end up, you know, playing really well, but coming away with nothing.
I think, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily the end of the world for City if that happens, for a variety of reasons. As part of the wider overall project, I think there's actually nothing wrong with a teeny bit of vulnerability being dropped in, because what it actually means is that the journey to the next time invulnerability is shown is no bad thing, and everyone can get back on with that. But that's very easy for me to say sat here right now, with the situation being the way in which it is. Listen, no one's ever done a quadruple. There's reasons for that. It's really, really hard. As I said before, I take one of the big two. The longer we keep it all alive, and it can all finish in one afternoon in mid-April against Manchester City, it can possibly finish in two afternoons in mid-April against Manchester City, you know. But the longer it all stays alive for, the more it'll feel like it's there. I think it's a funny thing. You know, Phil Neal is Liverpool. I think he's Liverpool's most decorated ever player. He's got something like 9 championship medals and 3 or possibly 4. No, he's got 4 European Cup winners medals.
Yeah. City legend as well, you know.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, did a bit, finished his career there. And there's a little thing where ultimately, not least because of the existence of Manchester City in their current form, Trent Alexander-Arnold will probably never quite get the medal haul that Phil Neal's got, but both in terms of what people who saw both play and also the realities of football, you know, what Trent, not to talk Phil Neal down, but Trent Alexander-Arnold is a phenomenal footballer who just also happens to play right back rather than Phil Neal, who was just a bit more of a right back, if we're all honest about it. And as I say, I don't mean to be disrespectful to anybody there, but that's the way it is. The truth, though, is the one thing I do think is that, therefore, in order to be the opportunity that these players have from a Liverpool point of view, if they could take that quadruple question all the way, is it does bestow upon them an argument-ending level of greatness. There will be, you know, for instance, I'm sure if I was to go on Radio Merseyside and try to talk through my Liverpool all-time 11 from stuff that you've read, clips that you've seen, and then the players you've got to view in person, there'll be people who'll say, yeah, but you know, effectively, but Steve Highway won this many trophies, how many's Mohamed Salah won?
Yeah.
And I think an answer that these footballers could sort of do with having, as an example, would be, well, what if they won all four of them in one year? And that'd be quite nice. Whereas I don't think that's the same sort of onus on Manchester City. Like, I think the idea of genuinely, there's a really weird thing that happens after we win in Madrid. Not weird, it makes complete sense when I explain it to you, but we win in Madrid and James Milner, final whistle goes, the players celebrate together, and the first player to run to the Liverpool supporters was James Milner, and he held up six fingers. And I remember, because it was six European Cups, and I remember just being really surprised, because I hadn't once thought about six European Cups. I'd thought about one for these lads, because they'd just gone through trying to win the league against that Manchester City team. They hadn't won a major trophy, and I was just focused on one. I just wanted these footballers to win one, because of how proud of them was. And I think when you are at Liverpool, Liverpool have won 44 trophies that don't include a Club World Cup, a Super Cup, or a Charity Shield. So 44 of the trophies that in inverted commas very much do count. So in order to be sort of in that clambering list of greatness of the weight of the Liverpoolian shirt, I think the idea of if they could do four all in one year, that'd be great. But genuinely, I mean, you know, just if they win a league or a European Cup this season, we've been going since 1892. We've won a lot of league, but it's only 19 of them. And 1892 was ages ago. We've been playing European football since the early 60s. We've won six European Cups. If we could make it seven, that'd be absolutely incredible. And I think that's, again, back to the idea that we've got to not drive ourselves mad in amongst all of this. We've got to absolutely relish every single minute of it where it's possible, but also just sort of accept that ultimately at the end of it, and this is the bit that when people, certainly people who aren't me, really irritate people, is when I say this, it remains still, for all of its things that it's got going on, for all the ways in which it's big business and there's controversy around it in a global geopolitical sense, it is still a game.
Oh God, I wish, I wish I could just accept that for ahead of the fact. After the fact, I'm very happy. I'm very quickly able to get to that point. But ahead of the fact, I am so not up for it. I don't really understand. Neil, thank you very much. I was going to say, I hope everybody listened to it, it's made them relax, but it's not made me relax anymore. So I don't know if it's done the job for them. But if you can, enjoy the next few weeks, and you know, I promise I'll try to do the same.
Ones. You're watching the best ones. You're watching the best. The best I say is, you know, City's, you've got Atletico, so many really good players, plus all the Manchester City ones. Then you get three, you'll have Chelsea or Real Madrid, so many good players, plus the Manchester City ones. You're playing Liverpool twice, we're really good, you're really good. You're watching the best ones. These are the best ones.
Yeah. I was going to say, but it's not facing Macclesfield and York, but I think both of them beat City in that 1998-99 season. So, there we go. Neil, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for trying to put my mind at ease. And that's it for this week's Blue Moon podcast. If you've enjoyed it, then please go and give it a rating and a review in all the usual places, but especially on Apple Podcasts if you can. If you'd like some more stuff to listen to over the international break, then why not give our Patreon a go? There's two-thirds of a season's worth of bonus shows on there now, plus all of last season's played for both episodes. This year we've been doing some new formats too, including City Heaven, City Hell, where me and a City fan and an opposition fan reflect on four meetings between the two sides. But this week's bonus episode was Andrew Detmer from the Main Road Ramble picking out his games that made me. Think Desert Island Discs, but for City games. Here's a short clip.
So this was my first City match, and you know, I made the joke to David when I was selecting these that at this point, I was like, man, this match going stuff's pretty easy, because I had literally just sat down maybe 5 seconds before Jesus Navas just, you know, buries it. And then the rest of the match was basically one giant party.
Yeah.
City had not had a great start to the season. It kind of had just been up or down. There had obviously been, you know, I think, you know, Aguero had scored a decent amount of goals, and there were signs that there was something there, but it certainly wasn't. I feel like going into that match, I wasn't like, oh, City are going to easily win this match, or even I don't think I even thought like, oh yeah, I expect City to put on a good performance. I was kind of thinking, you know, it's a big match to go see for my first one. But Spurs are a good side, so who knows what happens. And I certainly don't think I was thinking, yeah, City have a real shot at the title this season.
Yeah, my other memory, and I can't explain why I can remember this, but I've got this vivid image of the Spurs defender, Yunus Kabul, being sick in the centre circle. That was this. I don't know if you remember that. It was because the only reason I remember is because he took on a lot of energy drink and it was bright. His vomit was bright green. I know that, I don't know.
I had completely forgotten that until you just said it, and now I can vividly see it. And you're right, like that almost neon green, which had he not taken on sports drink, probably would have been a sign of something far more problematic.
That was a clip of this week's Patreon bonus show. If you'd like to hear the full thing, it's online now. Just sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. As an added extra, you'll also get these podcasts every Thursday night or Friday morning without the adverts as well. I'll be back next week to preview the game with Burnley and the first leg with Atletico Madrid. So I'll see you then.